All right, good morning, everyone. Good morning. Let's try that one more time. Good morning, everyone. Good morning. So this is the last day of the show. This is the first session of the day. I'm exhausted. It's been a very, very long week, and this is the third week on the road for me in a row. So I'm going to rely on you, your questions, your laughter, or your groans of disappointment at the jokes that I might tell to keep me going throughout the session. Hopefully the information that we're going to present today that we'll cover will be enough to keep you engaged and awake and make it worth your while to get up out of bed this early in the morning. So we'll use that as a starting point. By manner of introductions, my name is Matthew Roach. I'm a program manager on the SQL Server team based out of Redmond. I'm currently working on master data services and data quality services before moving over to the data curation team, which has those two products. I worked on the SQL Server integration services team, and before I joined Microsoft, I was a data warehousing and BI consultant with a strong focus on ETL using integration services. So this topic, enterprise information management, is a topic that is near and dear to my heart. I've seen a lot of these problems throughout the years playing out at different customer sites, working on different projects, and even after joining Microsoft, you know, even though I believe that we use our own technology very, very well internally, a lot of the problems that I'm describing today I still see playing out in one format or one context or another today. So with no, with no delay, I want to start off with a story. And at the end of the story, or maybe even at the beginning, I want to know if this sounds familiar to you guys, just to make sure that we're on the same page. So we've got a guy. We've got a business guy. This guy goes into meetings, and he needs to present information to convince someone to do something. So often you're saying, well, I need to open up a store in a new market. I need to extend my data center. I need to add a new product line. And in order to make that decision, because we're asking the business to invest, you know, some sum of money, maybe thousands, maybe millions of euros, we need to support that with data. Now, the business guy realizes that some of this data is in one system. Some of it's in another system. Some of it's in a third system. So we might have a manufacturing system. We might have a distribution system. We might have an HR system or a CRM system. Some of these are databases. Some of them might be spreadsheets. Some of them might be mainframe applications. The data's in different places. So today what this guy is doing is he is manually collating the data. So meetings start off like this. There's the two standard excuses that meetings start with. It's like, oh, well, here's what we're going to talk about today. We don't really have the data, excuse number one, so this is what I think is going on. Let's make a decision. Or it could start with, here's what I want to do, and I've spent the last week getting all of the data from these different places, so let's make this decision. That's excuse number two. But if the executives, the people actually making the final decision, if they say, all right, well, we see this data, but let's see it in a slightly different way. Let's pivot it on a different axis or add another dimension. At that point, it's going to be another week or however long to get the data together. So does this sound familiar to anyone? Have you heard those excuses? Okay, a couple of hands going up in the back. It's the guys in the back that I can't see that are raising their hands. So I'm not going to ask anyone if they have used those excuses. I'll admit to doing that on occasion myself. But our business guy, he has an idea. He's been reading magazines. He's heard about business intelligence. And he has the goal to have some scorecards, some dashboards, some reports. And he knows that a BI solution, perhaps with an analysis services cube or some other end state, might help him solve this problem, get the data together. So he gets executive sponsorship. He gets the budget, probably the two most important success factors for any project, especially with BI. Engages with the IT department to build a relational data warehouse. They bring in some developers to build the ETL subsystem to move the data from all of these source systems, to bring it down in. So here, he then can both use the data, share it with the rest of the team. He's the hero. Everyone has the data that they need. And at least in theory, we end up with one version of the truth in our BI application. So this is what BI projects look like today. Everybody's happy at the end, right? That's the shortest session of the week. This is a phrase, I've used this one version of the truth phrase deliberately. Has anyone heard this before? Another show of hands. So a couple people, maybe 30 or 40%. This was one of the marketing phrases that we used for the SQL Server 2005 release. This is quite a while ago. And essentially what we saw at that point is we saw that depending on who ran a report against what data, you know, whether it was against the master system or the copy of the spreadsheet that you got from Bob in accounting last week, you would end up with different figures for the same business dimension. So you'd end up with different versions of the truth. And of course, this causes business problems because you don't know if you're making decisions based on the right data. But what we're finding today is that even when we have all of the data in one place, this one version of the truth in the BI solution, where all the data gets pulled in and people are running reports off this centralized data store, today, those people are not happy. And the reason for this is that one version of the truth isn't true. Oftentimes, when the data gets into the BI solutions, it's coming from these source systems, this is when people realize, it's like, hey, you know, it's great that it's there. It's great that this information is at my fingertips, but it's not right. So this is out of date, or we have different representations of the same data. So you might have, keep in mind, I'm the American, so when I come to the Netherlands, you know, I thought that Amsterdam was in Holland, and people here are called Dutch, which doesn't really line up. And I understand there's logic behind this, but different representations of the same data, right? So do we call it Holland? Do we call it the Netherlands? For US states, do we have California spelled out, or Calif. Dot, or CA for the postal code? Different systems track things in different ways. And even inside the same system, there may be inaccurate or incomplete or non-standard data. And more often, what I see is instead of those two excuses that we talked about at the beginning, we see a different excuse. The meeting starts off with a presentation. It brings up the data. We've got these reports coming out of the IT-sanctioned system. And the presentation starts with, well, I pulled these reports out of the BI system. But before you look too closely at the data, we're aware that it has this problem and this problem and this problem. So let's, you know, that starts off with a different excuse or a different caveat. And for the story here, we've got data, garbage data that's coming out. We can trace it back, and the more we look, the more we find. We trace it back to the data warehouse, find out what's coming from this source system. So we bring in another developer. We're going to update the ETL subsystem to do some cleansing, maybe add, assuming it's integration services, we add a script component, we do some custom cleansing. Maybe, we found more in this other system, so maybe a lookup table to say, we've got this bad data, we're going to translate it into this good data. But the more we look, the more we try to get that ETL subsystem in place, the more garbage data that we find. And even if we update our ETL processes to cleanse all of the data problems that we find today, it's still not a solution. And the reason it's not a solution, this garbage data is getting in here because those source systems don't have the necessary validation. If garbage got in before, it's going to get in again. And all too often, we realize that instead of just having isolated bits of garbage data, garbage in, garbage out, we're actually building our solution on a landfill of garbage. And perhaps I'm exaggerating a little, perhaps not. BI projects tend to bring this out more than anything else. If you think about building a line of business system, you've got your transactional OLTP system. It's designed for a very narrow set of scenarios. So you've got inserts, updates, deletes, maybe a couple queries or so, and the data does exactly what it was designed to do. But in a BI solution, not only are you taking data from one system and putting it side by side with data from another system, you're also using it in ways that it was never designed to be used. And because of this, instead of looking at the data through a very narrow keyhole, you're opening the doors and looking at it from more angles and more directions, and more users are using it for more things. So the problems that have always been there in the data simply become more important, more obvious, and have a larger business impact. So, time for a pop quiz. What percentage of the overall effort for this BI solution went into building the ETL subsystem that didn't clean the data? So who thinks it was 50% or more? All right, so who thinks it was 60% or more? Who thinks it was 70% or more? So According to the Kimball Group, which is one of the big data warehousing and BI think tanks and consultancies out there, they estimate that the ETL subsystem, at a minimum, accounts for 70% of the time, effort, and budget for the average BI project. You see different numbers in different places, so don't think too much about the specific number, but it's a significant majority of effort goes into building something that doesn't do what it needs to do. So you may be asking, oh, come on, you're exaggerating things. You work on the MDS and DQS team. It's not really that bad, right? According to the Information Week survey that they did last year, we actually have data quality being identified as the top adoption problem for BI. So this is what is keeping companies either from investing in BI or continuing their investments. And it's not just about BI. So we talked about how BI is sort of the flagship for this scenario, but any type of information management, the top three impediments for information management success all again come down to data integration, data management, data quality. And for master data systems, so having a system that will allow you a consistent way to manage and secure and update and curate that data, the factors that are driving interest in this, again, come down to data quality or downstream problems due to that quality. Now, if we're introducing a problem, so want to set some context, and let me ask one more time before we move on, does this story look familiar to you guys? Is this something that you see in one scale or another? So I see heads nodding, I see people smiling, so it's not just me. We are on the same basic page. In SQL Server 2012, we have a set of enterprise information management tools. We put under a data curation bucket, so think about what a curator does at the museum. This is the person who's responsible for making sure that all of the exhibits are, you know, cleaned and up-to-date and managed, the care and feeding of those things. The same sort of thing needs to happen to data in order for us to get the most out of it. So we've got three different products here. I'm actually going to start at the bottom and start with what is likely the most familiar of them. Who has used SQL Server Integration Services in the past? And I expect probably every single hand is going to go up, except for the people who never raise their hands in presentations. So overwhelming majority. Integration Services has been around since SQL Server 2005, my favorite tool in the world. SQL Server 2012 is the most significant release of Integration Services ever, including the 2005 release. We're not going to do a what's new in integration services in this session because that's a larger and different discussion, but I do want to say that if you have not looked at integration services in 2012, definitely look at it. This release makes me wish that I was out being a consultant again so that I could use the product more for real solutions. It is compelling and awesome, and I won't talk about it again. So moving clockwise around our wheel, we also have data quality services. Data quality services was introduced in SQL Server 2012. DQS is a tool that will allow you to define knowledge about your data, so what data is right, what data is wrong, and can then do cleansing and matching around it. One of the things that differentiates DQS from some competitive or competing data quality tools is the fact that it is knowledge-driven. Your business users can actually put in information about their data, your data, and then there's all the algorithmic and computational logic around it that will take that and do more automated cleansing. It can either be interactive or it can be integrated into an SSIS data flow. So the knowledge that your business users put together can then get plugged into your automated batch processes. And finally, in the upper right-hand corner, we have Master Data Services. MDS was released in SQL Server 2008 R2. That was the first release. 2012 is a big move forward as well. Better performance, better usability, things along those lines. One of the things that we have added for Master Data Services in SQL 2012 is a new Excel add-in. So let's jump back to the SQL 2005 BI release. Remember, we had the one version of the truth marketing label, but at the same time, the big aspect of that release was BI for everyone. And for the folks with the cameras, definitely feel free to take pictures, but all of these slides will be available 24 to 48 hours afterwards. You can download them from the conference website, so take them if you want to, but don't feel compelled. You can actually download them onto your laptop and then take a photo of your laptop afterwards. You get better resolution that way. So for the 2005 release, we're trying to democratize business intelligence. Before SQL Server's BI tools, it was very, very common that only a handful of data analysts and statisticians would actually have access to these expensive proprietary tools. With SQL Server and the Microsoft Office, we now have BI in SharePoint, we have BI in Excel, Power Pivot and Power View put these tools right in the user's hands. It's about democratizing BI, so it's BI for everyone. Well, with MDS and DQS, we're trying to democratize data management and data quality, information management. These are tools that the IT department and the business users can work together to deliver the solution that the business needs. Because think about business intelligence. It's not a technology problem. It's not a technology space. Technology is part of it, but no matter how much technology you throw at business, unless the business is involved, the end goals are never actually going to be met. And I assume that I'm preaching to the choir here. So let's talk a little bit about a scenario. Take a look at this report and see if anything leaps out at you as being perhaps less than ideal. So at least one gentleman up front here has seen similar things. So we'll look down on the left-hand side. We'll look at our rows to start with. We have different representations of what are obviously, or obvious to me anyway, supposed to be the same data. We've got CA, we've got Calif, we've got California. So we've got different representations. These should probably be rolled up into the same row, right? How about BE? Is there a US state with a BE abbreviation? I'm not good at geography, but I'm pretty sure no. Let's look up at the columns, at those column labels up there. So we have many different representations or variations. These are things that also might be able to be consolidated and cleansed. So let us move on and see how we will move forward to take this report and turn it into something that the business can use. So this is my little canonical example of the type of problem that makes business users not use the BI solutions that are delivered to them. So integration services is a data movement tool. And what I'm trying to do on this slide as well is to sum up complex and rich technologies with two words for each technology. So integration services, data movement. We know that it can extract, it can transform, it can load. We know that it's got all these different things that it does. We're going to say that it's data movement because it's going to get it from one place to another place when you need it, how you need it. DQS is spell checking for your data. And the DQS team hates it when you summarize this great product that we spent years and years building with two words because it's much more complex. But if you think about how spell checking works in a Word document or other type of text, it flags problems, helps you solve those problems. The analogy, it perhaps not hold up to close inspection, but it gets the job done. For master data services, these are your reference tables. Obviously, master data is more complex than this. So master data is about having a common repository for the data that is crucial to your business, products, customers, suppliers, parts. Think about how your business runs. If you're in the airline industry, it may be flights, it might be equipment, it might be customers. Depends on your vertical. But in the end, you need to have this data in a common location with tools so that the people who can say, this is right and this is wrong. This flight was canceled. We need to update this. Or we're no longer running this flight on this schedule. Or now it doesn't just go from Amsterdam to Milan. It actually connects Amsterdam to Milan to Berlin before coming back. Making sure that the people running the business have a consistent set of tools to keep the data up to date so that it can then be used in other systems, such as a BI system. This is where master data, either any master data management system or MDS in particular, can come in. How do we use them together? First thing that you want to do, you want to cleanse your data. No matter what else you do downstream, whether you're integrating it, managing it, or just using it, getting it corrected is the most important first step. And even though there are lots of ways to put things together, so these are guidelines or best practices, I see time and time again that if you try to do things in a different order with cleansing further down the line, it runs into trouble. You can then match the data to remove duplicates. We saw the three different versions of California there. So once the data is cleansed, we have the consistent representation. You can then, regardless of what system the data is coming from, to say, this record in this system is, from a business perspective, identical to this record in this other system, or maybe even within the same system, and either update them so that you only have the one record, or at least have the relationship between those. And can then manage that data. So Master Data Services has approvals and workflows and versioning, all sorts of tools that will allow you to, again, handle the care and feeding, the curation of the data in an ongoing basis. And then once it's done, you can use integration services to integrate these different pieces, to automate them, to make it so that the cleansed data that has been validated and managed by the business users, these data stewards or data curators, can end up in the systems where the data needs to be. So with data quality services, where we're going to start off, are four main processes or four main steps that we will go through. The first one is a process of knowledge discovery. Many of the customers that we've worked with on the DQS team, even though they're mature enterprise customers, they honestly don't know what they're starting with. They have source systems that have come in through acquisitions, or they are legacy systems that there's the one guy who's been there forever. He's the only person that knows how to do it. And I see people are smiling as well. So this is something that that isn't just in the US, but there's a very small team that actually knows how to use this system. And they're trying to get a better handle on the data and how it's used and what state it's in before those people retire. We can create domains, which are our data fields, to map the information coming from these source systems. We've discovered that knowledge. We can map it into a DQS domain. And those domains can have rules and reference data and other things attached to them. Once the knowledge base with those domains is created, we can then have a DQS project to actually use the knowledge to cleanse the data. So we've got the bad data coming in. We've got the knowledge and the automated algorithms that do the cleansing. Good data comes back out at the other end. Once the data has been cleaned so that it's in a more consistent state, we can then create a matching policy that will allow us to identify duplicates and then remove them. Now, I've been talking far too much. Let's demo instead. So this is where my bad data is coming from, or at least some of it. So let me zoom in here a little. You guys saw the sample report in the slide deck. This is one of the sources. So this is where we have, this is where we have the product data coming from. So different versions of the same product. We want to clean these so that we have the standard representations of what's going on. So what I will do is I will come over into my data quality services client application. DQS has three primary components. The first one is the DQS engine, or the DQS server. This is implemented, implemented in the SQL Server relational database. So as you install DQS, you'll have a DQS database that is defined. You can name it whatever you want. There's actually two databases that make it up. But there are the DQS databases, and you can... there is no standalone server component. It's part of the relational database, so you connect to it up from the DQS client. The DQS client, which we're looking at here, is the interactive tool where you can create knowledge bases, manage the knowledge about the data, and do interactive cleansing through data quality projects. The third component is a SQL Server Integration Services data flow component for DQS cleansing to integrate the DQS processing into your data flow. So I'm going to start off by creating a new knowledge base. And choose domain management, which is my default here. We'll choose next. I'm going to create a domain called product. So we've got different options here. So you can specify different languages. You can enable or disable spell checking. We won't get into too many details here, but we will call it product. We'll choose OK. And once the domain is created, there's different options that we can set. So here on the left, these are the domain properties that we'd set originally. The second tab is for reference data or reference data providers. DQS integrates with the Azure Data Marketplace There are DQS-specific data services up there, so you can automatically plug in for address cleansing, phone cleansing, business name cleansing. So if there's a customized or specialized data domain that's out there, instead of having to define all of the rules yourselves, you can simply plug in to something that exists up in the cloud. There are domain rules. So for a domain rule, you could say that the sales quantity must be greater than zero. If it's a string, you can say it must contain this, it may not contain this, it has to conform to this regular expression. If it's a date, you can put in ranges, standard type checking there. There are what we call term-based relations. This is essentially doing a search and replace on the data. So if some of your data will have an abbreviation, the SVR instead of server, for example, you can say anytime that you see SVR, replace it with server to come up with this standard representation. And where we're going to start here, we can have a list of domain values. The one value that's in there by default for any domain is DQS null. We actually have our own representation of null because this data is coming in from all sorts of different systems, which will in turn have their own representations of null. If it's coming from a relational database, it might actually be null. If it's coming from Excel, it might be blank. If it's coming from some mainframe system, it might be negative 1 or 99999 or whatever the missing value is. So for products, we don't want this to be valid, so we will say that this is an invalid just by selecting that. And instead of manually adding domain values, I will type as little as possible during my demos because I'm a horrible typist. I'm going to import these values from Excel. I will browse out here, go to the customer sales folder, come in and choose the product family worksheet. I'll choose OK. So this is a list of known good values that we got from our business team. So essentially they're saying, you know, all those crappy values that we saw in the report, that's not what we want. It should be one of these things. And odds are you're going to have to work with your business team to create this list. It'll be an iterative process as you're going through knowledge discovery. But we now have a list of what the business team has said are the right values. But as we look more closely, you may notice this as well. This perhaps is not the right value. So let's actually correct this. So where we have this, I'm going to say that this is invalid, and I'm going to correct this to Windows Small Business Server Essentials 2001. We'll click away. Let me scroll down here. So notice that we now have both the invalid value and the valid value, and it looks like we've got one more here too, so we will say that this is invalid, and we will then say Windows Small Business Server Premium 2008, that looks about right. So let us choose finish. So we have defined knowledge about our data. We will do more than this, don't worry. We'll choose finish. We'll choose publish. By publishing the knowledge base that we've just created, we're essentially making it for use in projects. And I will then come in and choose a new data quality project, call that demo one. We will use the knowledge base that we just created. We'll choose cleansing for our activity. And I'm going to pull in data from this customer sales spreadsheet. We're going to our sales worksheet. We will choose product and map it to our product domain. We'll go on and see what we can find. We'll start this cleansing project. So DQS can work with data that's coming from Excel or coming from SQL Server or any source that you can get into those. But right now, we just connect to those two data sources directly. So we've run our project. And we've got some basic statistics down here. So I'm going to zoom in. Notice that we have about 4% of the values it corrected. So it could say, based on the list of what's good and the knowledge that's in there, it can only work with about 4% of these. There are about 15% that it suggested. So it thinks that it has a match, but it's not confident enough. We have a system-wide setting for confidence for data correction. The default is 80%. It's essentially saying how much of the correction do you want the system to do for you Or at what level do you want someone to be involved to actually look at it and say this is right or it's not? But if we come over here to the end, you will notice that the accuracy value is very small, and it's essentially saying, are you sure that you have the right mappings in place? So with a more complete knowledge base, if you have an accuracy this low, the most common reason is you mapped one field in your data source to the wrong domain. So I see a gentleman smiling here. Have you done that already? Or I've done that more times than I will admit in front of an audience. So I'm actually going to close out here and create a new knowledge base to work with. So I'm going to choose New. I'm going to create it from a DQS file. So a DQS file is essentially a standalone file that will contain all of the data, all of the knowledge, all of the rules that we've defined, and just in cooking show format. Do you guys ever watch cooking shows? So they'll do the first steps, and during a commercial break, they come back, and everything is done and beautiful because someone did it off stage. I did this off stage earlier. We will choose Next. These DQS files are awesome as a tool for sharing knowledge and sharing the work that you're doing between team members. So very easy. You save the whole knowledge base out, share it with someone else on the team. Great way. Or if you are, I won't get too much into that scenario. Let's keep on the demo. So I will choose my product domain again, and we have the same values. So this is not anything new. But we have added some term-based relations. These TBRs, that search and replace that I had mentioned, we've essentially identified in our data there's a set of common abbreviations, so BUS for business or data CNTR for data center and so on. We're also eliminating English entirely. So all of the products that we're selling, it's a U.S. company, they're all the English editions, they're not selling outside of the U.S., so we don't care that it's English, we're simply going to replace this. But for the rest of these, we are going through and doing these corrections. We haven't created any domain rules, but I do want to show off this UI. So the for a string domain, you see all of the different options that we have here. So is it numeric? Is it a date? Is it in this list? Is it not in this list? Does it have the patterns down at the end are for regular expressions. So a ton of flexibility here. Anything that you would do with a check constraint in your database, you can do that and more here. And we also added a license quantity domain. So this is one of the other fields coming in from that spreadsheet. And here we have not a list of domain values, but here we have a domain rule saying that it has to be greater than zero since it is a numeric field. So we will choose Finish and Publish. And keep in mind, we've just created a brand new knowledge base from that DQS file. So we'll call this Demo 2 for our project. We'll choose the same knowledge base that we've just created. We will choose Next. Again, we will choose our Excel file for our source, although typically you're just going against Excel when you're the business user using the interactive cleansing. As the IT guy, you'll be going against the SQL Server where the data lives most of the time. So we'll come back up here to Customer Sales. We will choose the Sales Worksheet again. We will choose product and license quantity and product and... Oh, we have the wrong data types. I am going to remove this guy. So that's what you get when you're modifying your demos ad hoc at the last minute. So we've got our product domain. We'll choose start. So notice what we now have. So our accuracy is much greater. So we've got very high completeness and a very high accuracy. Let's go to the next step and look at the details. So what we just did was two quick iterations through. Some of the customers that we worked with on our TAP program, the early adopters that use our products in production before the products are actually released, some of our TAP customers were going through and iterating for several weeks, so hundreds and hundreds of iterations as they learn more about their data. They were actually working with data sets where they're pulling in from thousands of different sources, And this one particular customer had about 1.8 million business entities. Lenders was the entity that they were working with. Coming out of all these source systems, they had 1.8 million different ones. By building up their knowledge base, so correction rules from A to B or C to D, they were actually able to clean it, get it into a consistent state, and identify around 5,000 or so different lenders out of the nearly 2 million lenders that they started with. Not only did this enable them to do their business much more effectively, they've actually turned around and are now selling that data as a new business stream. So we have seen quick iteration for a real business problem. You're probably going to spend more time on it than this. So let me come over, first of all, to the corrected tab and zoom in. Remember we talked about that confidence level? This is the set of records where the DQS system is 80% or more, higher than 80% confident that the old value should be corrected to one of these values that is in the system. So these all look good. And notice that by default we have approve listed here. Let's come over to suggested. So these are systems, or these are values rather, where the confidence level, given the knowledge that we've defined, wasn't high enough. So we either have a greater distance between the strings, or as we will expand out here, we've got this ROK, not sure exactly what the abbreviation stands for. It wasn't in the set of term-based relations that we had put in there. It's not something that we're explicitly stripping out, so the confidence isn't quite as high. But we can say for right now, either to approve or reject specific items with the radio buttons on the individual rows, or we can choose to approve all. So we will choose approve all here. They move over from suggested to corrected, and when we choose next, we can then export that data out. We won't do it in this particular demo. We can export that data out either into a SQL table or into an Excel workbook or CSV file so that you have either the corrected data or the old and the corrected. So we will choose finish for the project. And what we have done here is we have essentially taken our product data and gotten it into a consistent state. What about the rows? We've cleaned up the columns on that report. What about the rows? This is the customer data that we're pulling from for that report. And we have for each of these customers different addresses. And you can see where some of the problems are coming from. So we have inconsistent references either with the name of the state or the abbreviation. Some things, or here's that BE again, aren't valid in that value at all. And has anyone here ever worked with address cleansing? Is this a problem space that you've worked with? Non-trivial problem space. But if you try to tackle this on your own, it's a lot of work, often for inconsistent results. We're not going to try to do that. We're going to see how DQS integrates in with some of these online providers. So I have, yet again, going back to my cooking show analogy, I have a finished dish here, a finished knowledge base that I've already created. And it has, in addition to the product and license quantity and so on, we also have domains for our customers and for our addresses. And I am going to come down here for this full address composite domain. Notice it has a different icon. This is essentially a container for address, city, state, postal code, so that we can work with it as a unit. And for this composite domain, we are connecting to our Melissa Data address check cloud provider. This is a web service that we can connect to automatically. It's just a click and map the domains with no coding required. And there are a whole set. Come on, let's click here. You're not going to click, are you? So yeah, I guess we have the domains mapped already. So all of the domains are already mapped, but you can expand this out to see what additional columns the RDS provider can support, so the schema is published. And we also have a separate reference provider that we are connecting to for our phone cleansings. This is CDine Corporation. They will both validate the phones, make sure the phone number is correct, and each one of these in addition to finding problems in the data and correcting those problems, they will augment the data as well. For your addresses, you'll get back a lat and long. You'll get back information about the political district and so on. So Melissa Data has all sorts of spatial information that they can provide. And CDyne, for the phone numbers, will let you know what city it's based in, whether it's a cell number, a business number, a residential number, or what the phone provider is for, or what the whatchamacallit, the phone company is for that given phone. So you actually get back more information than you had when you passed it in. Yet again, for my project, I've opened up a cleansing project, or created a new cleansing project, rather. We will connect to our same workbooks. We've got address, city, state, postal code, and phone. We've got address, city, state, postal code, phone, and next, and start. So, same basic process. One thing that's different here is that for these domains, and we could be doing this all at once as well, I'm sort of trying to build this up step by step, but for these domains that we are cleansing right now, instead of having our own custom-built knowledge about our data, these are public domains. It's something that's generally applicable. So we're using this cloud service to go out to cleanse them, and we can see that not only do we have the little cloud icon next to it to show that we are going out into the Azure cloud to do the cleansing, we can see what was corrected, what was suggested, and so on. So we've got a lot of changes being made by these providers. Let me come in here to the next. And notice that for each one of these, we can see on the left the original address. So here we, oh, let me actually expand this out. Come on. Yeah, I'm not having the best mouse day, I'm afraid. There we go. So we can see under suggested, again, that we have 100 legends being translated into 100 legends way. We have the zip code being corrected. There are some places where here we have San Francisco. The postal code is being corrected for us. So it's essentially going out for this provider and not just checking to make sure that San Francisco is in California instead of in Washington or whatever state. It's also making sure that for this particular street address, that street is actually in that city. It has this number. It's in this zip code. All sorts of custom logic built in. I will say for each one of these guys, so these are suggested. So we will say it will approve all of them. That is good. And this will come over to be in the corrected column. Notice that on the new column, these are records where the reference provider or the knowledge that's in the knowledge base wasn't enough to come up with any match. So notice that for these, either we just have the city or we just have the city, state, and postal code. But for this, there's just not enough information to go on. You can't get an address out of this. For something like this, it comes back to the business user. You know, we'll put these in a database where the business user can then go and look at them to track it down and find out what the correct value is. Remember, it's the technology and the business working together. And when we choose next, we can also see, and instead of exporting it, we'll just look at it over here on the left. Notice in our output data preview, we have both source and output information, so we can see the before and the after. And I will scroll over to the left here to see, for example, this is one of the things that just delights me as a BI guy, so as a business intelligence developer, the fact that I can get back this additional information, this enriched data. Imagine how valuable it would be for you to be able to take your customer or whatever geospatial information, that dimension, and do spatial mapping so that your reports can actually have a map that's interactive as opposed to simply having the list of the addresses. And this is a great way to enable that. So the other thing that we can do, I will choose finish here. The other thing that we can do with data quality services is defining a matching policy. So we've talked about cleansing. We'll get that data into a consistent state. We start with the source data, run it through the knowledge base, either interactively like we've seen here or using integration services, which we're about to see. You have a question, sir? Okay, so that's a great question. So is the data uploaded or is the rule set downloaded? The data is uploaded, and depending on how the individual reference providers are implemented, the code for that reference provider may be in Azure, or it may be on their own data centers. So if there are regulations that you're concerned of, you should look at these specific providers. We do have information about that, but the columns that need to be cleansed or the domains that need to be cleansed, the value for those domains are uploaded, and then the cleansed results are sent back. No logic is sent down to the DQS machine. So excellent question, and thank you. So in addition to the cleansing, we can also do matching and deduplication. So again, I am going to choose Excel, and I'm going to choose my customer sales, and I'm going to choose customers. So for my domains, I will choose phone number and postal code, city. Oh. Darn it. Well, perhaps we are not going. Oh, there we go. I'm not sure what I clicked to make this fire off right away, so we won't spend too much time on cleansing, but what I do want to point out is that in your matching policy, which is also part of the same knowledge base, you can define for the individual domains what weight they should be given when you're doing matching. So if you don't explicitly define a matching policy, if you're going to identify duplicates and then to remove them, by default, all of the fields, all the domains that you're looking at, they'll have the same weight. So if you have 10, each one counts for 10%. You can specify different weights. So for example, if the street address is the same or the phone number is the same, you might give this greater weight because that's more meaningful. Or you might say that unless the phone number is the same, or unless the state is the same, don't even bother trying to match because this is a prerequisite. You can actually identify prerequisites there, and you can say, do these fields need to be exactly the same or similar for the purposes of matching? So you've got flexibility there too. Let me choose cancel. We'll jump back out of here, and let me show a few more things. Once we have the knowledge base defined, the user goes through, iterates, that might be the end of it. We have some customers where they're never integrating DQS into their end-to-end processes. It's simply a tool to empower the users to cleanse the data that the users are working with. More often, though, we will see that the customers will have the users, these data stewards, working with the DQS client to build a knowledge base and do interactive cleansing. Once they have enough information in there to have meaningful cleansing coming out of their knowledge, we will integrate that into the ETL process, going back to that first story where they have the little gear that's not doing the cleansing. This allows all of those rules to be applied to the data flow, and there is a DQS cleansing transformation. So this is new in SQL Server 2012. You have to be using SQL 2012 integration services to use it, so you can't plug it into the previous versions. But essentially what we can do here is connect to our DQS knowledge base. So we've got a DQS connection manager, and then the selection of the knowledge base to which we want to connect, and this is the last one that we're looking at. We can see all the available domains down here. And then you go through to identify the input columns that are flowing through your data, through the data flow, and to map these into the domains down inside the product. Downstream, you can put in a conditional split transformation that the DQS cleansing transformation will add a status column for each input column that is being cleansed. so that you can see for that domain, for that column, for each individual row, was it correct, was it corrected, was it new, and then take the appropriate action based on that, based on your business rules. In this particular package, for the most part, we're simply counting to see how many were good, how many were bad, but we are then taking the bad data and the data that we've collected upstream and pump it into a logging table so that we can run some reports on it. So let's take this data, and again, at this point, it's pulling it in not from Excel, but from a SQL Server table where we have a different set of data, same domain, same business logic, but different data. We will execute this. And we can see that we've got 96 rows that need attention, so either new or invalid. We have some that are correct, a bunch that are corrected. We remove duplicates down here using a sort transform, and then drop this into a logging table. Once we've done this, very easy to build a report to see what the state of the data is. In an ideal world, this process would take those cleansed data or that cleansed data and push it back into the source system. So you've got the automated process where you identify data, you push it back up into the source, and that data is no longer bad anymore. In most situations, the complexity of the enterprise information space is such that either business rules don't permit it, you know, it's coming from a mainframe system where there is no easy automated way to push it back in, the business wants there to be a manual process around it, so it's not always easy to do that. So one thing that we see very commonly is to have customers that will use DQS and the pattern that we're showing here to use DQS to track the change of the state of the data over time. So you can see for the data that's coming from the source being validated against the knowledge base, what's good, what's bad. You put the bad data into a table where users can go back and look at it and then manually correct it in the source system. Or if I come back into the DQS client application, I can choose open project. And if we look at these down here, these projects that are in red, every time that this integration services component is executed, it will actually create a project on the server that your business users, your data stewards, can then open up and see what was done, see what the suggested, corrected, new, et cetera, values are, approve them, reject them, push the knowledge back into the knowledge base. Essentially, the more that you use this, the better the system gets. The more you use it, the more knowledge you have, the more effective it is for cleansing and matching. So let us jump back into the slides. Yes? So let me see if I can paraphrase the question. So coming back to the matching and deduplication, is there a way to have each one of these records assigned its own ID and you can then do a lookup against those things? So there are a couple different ways to answer. So it's a pretty complex question under the hood. So the short answer, just to make sure that this is clear as well, the integration services transformation is a cleansing transformation. Currently, we do not have the ability to do matching inside the data flow. Matching is an interactive process only. With that said, which we'll actually see some of this, time permitting, I'm running a little bit late, we'll actually see some of this in the master data services demo that's coming up. You can automatically identify and have a cluster ID for the groups of records that represent the same address or the same customer or what have you. And then once you have that ID stored in master data or another location, you could then do a lookup against that cluster and have one that you've identified as being the master. But it's not something that is as simple as what we just saw for the cleansing and the data flow. So did that answer your question okay? Okay. So DQS. Earlier on, we had seen that this is the quote-unquote spell checker for the data. To be more complete, it's a knowledge-driven system. We capture the knowledge of the business, so what data is right, what data is wrong, how can we correct these things. Once that manual knowledge is applied, there's then the statistical and algorithmic matching and correction that takes place as well. So we take the business knowledge, we apply the computer logic to it. We've got those term-based relations, we've got rules, we've got values, and we've got the reference data services through the Windows Azure Marketplace for address cleansing and phone cleansing, which we saw, even though we didn't look at the phones too closely. There's a dozen or so different providers that are up there right now. We've got others that are onboarding as we speak, so the number is increasing over time. Now, to move from data quality services into master data services, we're really switching gears quite a bit. Data quality services is about correcting the data. Master data services is about managing the data. And master data is a pretty big space. So if you go out and do some research, you'll find that there are lots of other products out there for master data. For the most part, when you have the conversations, you're talking with your manager when you get back into the office, if you say master data, he's probably going to think seven figures, maybe 2 or 3 years to implement it all the way, and it may be a hard conversation to start. With SQL Server 2012 Master Data Services, as mentioned up front, we're trying to democratize master data. We're trying to come up with a set of tools and a platform that you can use in minutes, not years. So that's a bold statement, right? So we have an Excel add-in that you can use for both data modeling and data management. So we can create entities, and an entity is analogous to a table. So it's got some logic and management added to it, but if you think of it as a table, you won't be far off. You can set attributes, so create attributes. Attributes are kind of like columns, but again, with additional logic. You can manage hierarchies. So just as analysis services dimensions have hierarchies as a native concept, master data services does as well, so that you can model your business, either your business models, your business taxonomies, or the like, to put things together inside your master data model to represent how your business actually runs. You have support for versions. So think about a situation where you have a dimension that's constantly changing over time, but at the end of each fiscal year, and tomorrow is the end of ours, I need to get my expenses in now that I think about it, but at the end of the fiscal year, you need to always be able to say, what did the data look like at the end of the year? You need to refer back to that that historical snapshot later on in time. Master data services versions are perfect for that type of scenario where you create a version of your model, you'll always be able to go back and see how the model looked at that point. And even if you change the data or change the schema after that, you can still connect back up to that. And for anyone who's worked with integration services, you know how picky the integration services data flow is as far as changes in source systems. So if a source system, the table that you're pulling data from changes, you remove a column, you rename a column, you change the data type, the data flow will not work. It won't connect until you update it to reflect those changes. Having your integration services package pull from a specific version in the master data model is a good way to have stability there as well. So let's actually jump in and see master data services. Instead of talking about it, let's actually see it work. So master data services has a few core components as well. Under the hood, there is a SQL Server database, so we're building on top of the relational engine again. We have a WCF web service, which runs inside of Internet Information Services. That web service has our business logic and is a fully supported and documented API. So all of the tools that we have, both the web UI I'm about to show off and the Excel add-in I'm about to show off, both of these use this WCF API to do all of their work. So if you want to create your own custom tools or to integrate MDS in with your other applications and processes, you can easily do this if you have .NET development skills on staff or personally. And there are actually third-party vendors out there, partners and software developers, who are building their own products on top of MDS as a system because it has all of these capabilities built in. So let me come in here. So here is our beautiful report when we're done. So we've got our product names that we've standardized, and we have our state. Oh, let me, not zooming particularly well today. So we've got our state list that we've now gotten standardized as well because we've cleansed those addresses. So let's come down here into our customers list. So we now have a standard set of customers. We've cleaned up the addresses, made sure that the addresses and the phone numbers are all what they should be. We've got it very consistent. Now what we want to do is we want to get this data into master data services so that it can be consistently managed. This will become the record or the system of record. And from this point on, anyone who needs customers can pull them out of here, either through Excel, through another tool, or by integrating it in with other applications. So I will select this data. It will come to the Master Data tab. So when we install the Master Data add-in for Excel, this is the tab that we get. So we'll look at some of these features later on. I'm going to choose Create Entity. I will connect to my local server. We'll choose Connect. When I choose Create Entity, I'm going to be doing a few different things. So the first thing, obviously, and I guess I didn't warm up my VM before jumping in here, but we're going to connect to the MDS server. We are going to take the schema that's defined in Excel and actually create an entity with the columns and the data types that are inferred from Excel. And once this is done, we will upload the data as well. So we will say customers. There are two different values that we need to supply here. There is a code, which will become our unique identifier, and there is an optional name attribute as well. The name is not required, but at different places in the UI and through the API, this is surfaced, so it's just a convenience as much as anything else. We have an ID value inside our data already. Otherwise, MDS can create one for us, but we will choose customer ID. And we will choose name, and we will choose OK. So here it's going to go out. It's going to create that entity. It will then load the data in. And what we now have here, so this is the worksheet that I loaded the data from. This worksheet that we're looking at right now, even though it may not leap out at you, is actually a live form that is connected directly to our MDS connection. So it'll give us this URL up at the top to let us know what server we're connecting to, what model, what version of that model, and so on. But if I were to create, let me actually jump over here. I'm going to create a new tab and choose my customer sales model and then double-click on this customer's entity. It'll go out and pull that data back in. So here we can see the data is now stored and managed inside of MDS. If I were to make a change here, so if we realize that this is not in Denver, it's in Colorado Springs, it will highlight that it has been changed. If there were any business rules that were being violated, it would actually change it to different colors. So you've got lots of feedback. What I want to do, though, let's actually undo this guy. Let's change this back. Change that back to Denver because we did validate the addresses. We don't want to mess up our data just for the demo. I want to change the attribute properties here. So I'm going to change for the state attribute, change the type to be a DBA or a domain-based attribute. So this will allow us to point this list or to point this attribute at another entity that's defined inside our model. So we will publish this change. So we've got to publish the change. Notice anytime we make a change and push it back to the server, we have the ability to add an annotation, either an annotation for all of the rows in the batch or for the individual rows that we're changing. This is kind of like if you're a developer, you're checking code into your source control system, and you have the check-in comment that will say why you're making the change or what bug you're closing by closing the change. Or by checking in the change, same sort of thing, but for data. Even if no comment is added, MDS automatically tracks who made what change and when, what the old value was, what the new value was. So if ever you end up with data that's not consistent, or if a customer comes back and says, why is it saying this on my report, you'll be able to see how that data got in. And notice now that for our state column, instead of just having the abbreviation, we actually have the abbreviation and the name, and there is a drop-down list from which we can select. For this particular entity that we've connected to, the state entity, the full name is the name attribute that was defined when we created the entity. So I mentioned that when you choose which attribute is going to be the ID and which is the name is surfaced at different places. This is one example of this. Let me jump over into Internet Explorer as well. So here is a view of that Windows Azure Marketplace where you can see some of the data sets and data services. But the other UI for Master Data Services is this Master Data Manager UI, where down in the bottom there are administrative tasks. You can manage users and security, versions, and the models themselves. Up at the top there are user tasks or information worker tasks. So I'm going to connect to the Explorer tool. So this is a tool that will allow you to work with both entities, attributes, and hierarchies and see the data in a different way. So most of the time we see customers using Excel as their primary tool for managing the data in MDS, but you can also for any entity, you can select a value, make changes to it, choose OK to save those changes back down, standard create, insert, update, delete, all of the standard functions, anything that's in MDS, you've got the built-in UI for it. And the reason I came in here is I want to show off a hierarchy. We support two different types of hierarchies in MDS, or two primary types. A derived hierarchy is a hierarchy where it will always have the same number of levels no matter where you are in the tree. So we have, you know, regions, districts, and states in this example. You can probably think of others for your business as well. The other type of hierarchy is what we call an explicit hierarchy, where instead of having a predefined number of levels, the number of levels and how they relate to each other is defined based on the data. So this might be something, you know, built on an org chart or reporting structure. And, you know, if you go from, you know, Steve Ballmer to Bill Gates, Bill reports to Steve right now if you look in the org structure, but there's nobody else down that tree. If you were to find me in the org structure, even though I'm an employee or a member of the employee entity, there are a few more people between Steve Ballmer and me if you actually look at the org chart. Hard to believe, I know. But here we have the ability to manage the levels. So we can come in here and see the districts and the regions and the states and do the same type of editing that we could do for the individual entities as well. So just a more intuitive or natural way for users to see hierarchical data. We don't currently expose hierarchies through Excel, so you do need to use the web UI for this, but lots of capabilities built in there. So the other thing that we want to do is we want to use DQS to remove duplicates from this data. So even though we've got this master list, there may be problems in there or duplicate data in there. So I'm going to choose the match data option from our master data tab. This will actually connect to a data quality knowledge base. So you can choose the knowledge base. This is the last one that was selected for this particular worksheet. And then map the worksheet columns to the domains. And the matching policy that's defined in the knowledge base can be used here as well. So when we go through and choose match, it will use that matching policy to identify the duplicates that are in there. And we can see, for example, we've got the cracker box and the cracker, but we also have the same address throughout and the same phone number, even though the business name is different. We're very confident in saying that these are the same things. DQS, exposed up through the MDS add-in, will add a cluster ID. So we have both the original ID, the cluster ID, and the code for the underlying data. We can then choose publish. By publishing this back down into the model, it is both creating that cluster ID column and storing or pushing the data from the workbook back up into it. So we can actually make changes to the schema, and as new data is coming in, let me do this guy here. Where is that? So there's also a combine data tool. So if you, say, for example, go through a merger and acquisition, or if you're gradually adding more business applications into MDS and new data is gradually coming in, you can open up the existing entity inside of MDS or inside of the MDS add-in, then copy and paste the data from whatever the other system is using this this combined data option, and then do the matching on top of it. So bring in new data, see what's new, see what's duplicate. You can either keep the cluster IDs in there so you actually have both versions of them, or you could highlight those ones that you don't want to keep and choose delete from the toolbar if you want to use this as the opportunity to remove the duplicates instead of having both versions in there. So let us jump back into our slides. So key thing, we've got the model creation in Excel. You can manually model using the web UI as well. So there's one thing that's neither on the slides nor in the demo that I've shown so far, but it's very important for enterprise and for integration, so I definitely want to mention this. So in addition to the Excel UI and the WCF API that I mentioned, we also have a feature in MDS that we call entity-based staging. So entity-based staging is a set of tables. So anytime that you create a new entity, a set of tables will get created that you can load data into using integration services or T-SQL or any other data movement tool. The reason that I say a set of tables is depending on whether it's just a standalone entity or there are relationships and hierarchies, there's one or up to three tables that you can load data into. Has anyone used MDS in previous versions? Anyone used 2008 R2? It was difficult to load data into MDS in 2008 R2. We had this great generic schema that you could load data into any entity using the same. It wasn't the happiest experience. So now we have a nice flat entity-specific model where essentially we can use the data flow to load the data into our entity-based staging tables and then run a story procedure. We'll actually look at this guy first. So we have this stored procedure that we will run, passing in a couple parameters to say, hey, we've got data in the staging table, now go take it and load it up into the actual entity itself. There are a few specific things that you need to do as you are going through to add data into these staging tables. There is an import type column that is required. This import type is letting you know, are we going to be adding data, are we going to be updating data, or are we going to be deleting data? You can actually push data into the entity-based staging table and then say, these are the members of the entity that we want to delete. So you can use it to do batch data modification, not just batch loading. And to get the data back out, once it's in there, let me come back up to the top and come down here to integration management. We have these things that we call subscription views. Oop, that is not what I want. Where a subscription view will allow you to specify a name, specify a model, a version of the model, and the entity or hierarchy to which you're connecting. So I can choose customers. And if it were a hierarchy, we could choose whether we wanted leaf members or a flattened view or other options for the hierarchy. Since this is just a regular entity, we will choose this. Where we do this, we will choose save. And let me run my my data flow real quick to load some data in. So I will come into integration services, execute this package. So, you know, standard data flow, but it gives us the ability to pull data out of some other system, add the necessary flags that MDS is expecting, push it into this MDS staging table, and then trigger the stored procedure to get the data into the entity itself. Let me come here. We'll connect. So in my databases, we have this MDS database. Did I not choose? Perhaps I didn't save the changes that I thought I saved. Are we done? What am I missing? Oh, there we are, required. All right, so we have our test view here. So in Management Studio, this is going to show up like any other view, and using whatever tool I'm interested in, I can pull the data out of this view. There we go. And I can see not only the data itself that I'm expecting to see, I can see information about what has been changed. So what version is it? We've got this underlying GUID, which is our master ID, as well as when was it last changed, who changed it, when was it created, who created it. All this information is automatically tracked without any additional effort required. So lots of functionalities there, both for modeling and using the data. Oh, I'll click there. Oh, come on. So in general, these EIM tools, we've got integration services, master data services, and data quality services. We've looked at BI because this is the low-hanging fruit. It's an obvious place to apply these technologies. There are lots of operational or OLTP scenarios as well. These tend to get more complex due to just the nature of synchronization between these systems. But the whole point of these tools, especially MDS and DQS, is to have the managed democratization of data quality and data management. We're trying to put as much functionality as possible into the hands of the business users. You IT guys, we've got so much to do. There's very little very little time and money to spare. So if we can empower the users but still have the ability to integrate that in with our processes and so on, that's sort of the sweet spot. It's the ideal place to be. And it's not all or nothing. There are lots of customers that are using MDS without DQS or vice versa. Choose what's important for you or what's most valuable for you and move forward. So my contact information is up here. I left Matt's slide up here. He and I worked together to put this presentation together for the TechEd conference in Orlando. He's not here in Amsterdam this week, but I wanted to give credit where credit is due, so a lot of the resources here are his. Again, these slides will be available. There's lots of additional resources both during the conference and after the conference. Let's move here. And just as a closing note, both thank you for coming, and please be sure to go to the TechEd website, fill out the evaluation, let us know what you liked, what you didn't like, and so on. Next year, we'll do even better. So thank you very much. And I will be down at the SQL Server product booth as well for maybe the next hour or so. I'm not technically on duty today, but since it's the last day of the show, I'll be spending time there this morning. So if you do have any follow-up questions or anything, we'll be respectful for the next speaker and leave the room, but I will be down at the booth. And if you want to come up while I'm I noticed one person is trying to come up. So come on up here, and I'll pack up the bag. We'll walk down together.